Hello and welcome to Over the Counter, the podcast from Drug Topics. I'm Gabrielle Entile. This episode is brought to you in part by American Associated Pharmacies. AAP is a nationwide cooperative of more than 2,000 independent pharmacies, operating since 2009 as one of America's largest and most comprehensive independent pharmacy organizations. AAP is governed by a board of directors elected from its membership, real independent pharmacy owners facing the same industry challenges as member pharmacies. The company serves as a partner, advocate, and collaborator to bring innovative and cost-saving programs to its members. AAP is member-focused, driven by integrity and loyalty to the independent pharmacy industry. Learn more today at rxaap.com. In this episode, Wayne Bass, Vice President of Sales, will walk us through the various elements of a purchase agreement between an independent pharmacy and a pharmaceutical wholesale distributor. Pharmacy owners must understand how the components of an agreement are assessed and valued by a wholesaler in order to make informed decisions. Before we get started today, Wayne, can you speak a bit to your professional background and the mission of AAP?
Sure. Thank you, Gabrielle, for having me on today. I began my career in retail, going all the way back to high school and through college. I actually started being the guy cleaning the floors. And after college, I continued in retail. I got into working at a national retail drug chain. After about 9-10 years in retail, I actually departed in that business as an associate general manager. From there, I moved on to business-to-business sales, and 28 years ago, I joined the independent pharmacy cooperative United Drugs, where in 2009, we merged United Drugs with API, Associated Pharmacies, Inc., and formed American Associated Pharmacies, which commonly known as AAP. Over the past 28 years, I've had various sales and management roles with the two organizations, but the last 10 years, I've been the vice president of sales. Both United Drugs and AAP were and are pharmacy cooperatives that are owned and governed by our member pharmacy owners. AAP's mission is to provide support and customized solutions for independent community pharmacies to enhance their profitability, streamline operations, and improve the quality of patient care.
Great. Thanks for that background. So stocking your pharmacy is one of the largest business costs, which is why it's so important to understand the key components of a wholesaler purchase agreement and how it could affect your bottom line. Let's discuss the purchase of brand RX products. First off, what factors into the cost of goods for brand name prescription items?
Yeah, the short answer is most everything a pharmacy purchases from its primary wholesaler can impact in the net brand cost of goods. All pharmacy or pharmaceutical suppliers will have a profitability formula model, commonly referred to as a ROC model, which stands for Return on Committed Capital. The evaluation and the formulas will vary slightly between the different organizations. But on a high level, the pharmacy with the pharmaceutical company is going to do is they're going to look at the pharmacy's total brand dollars, including the types or classes of brand that they're going to purchase from them. The generic RX total dollars, the dollar percentage as it equates to brand dollars. OTCs are factored in. Of course, pay terms are very important. The quicker you pay the wholesaler, the better cost of goods they're going to be able to give you. How many times the deliveries you're going to want per week, the distance of the deliveries. And then also, what's the term of the contract? Quite frequently, they're going to want a 2 to 3 year agreement there. Those are the major points. There's some smaller ones, but those are the major points that we'll factor in.
And what does it mean to purchase brand RX items at below cost or at a cost minus?
Isn't this strange? We ask our pharmaceutical suppliers to sell us at below their cost. When I started in this business 28 years ago, our pharmacies were buying at some factor above wholesale acquisition costs, or we call that WAC. But today, all pharmacy owners demand a WAC or cost minus number. WAC is like a list price. The actual cost at which the wholesaler purchases from the manufacturer is often debated. You'll see different things thrown around. But what is accurate really to say about WAC is the wholesaler will purchase at some number below WAC. But of course, on top of that, the wholesaler will receive some payment discounts and some administrative fees and such from the manufacturer. But they also have to, once they receive that product in bulk. The wholesaler needs to pick that, pack the items, ship it. Pharmacies expect free shipping, and then of course receive returns. So what is the true cost? Where is the wholesaler's really break-even point when we're talking about cost minus? The best way to look at this is the best way to find out really is to ask your primary supplier, what brand cost of goods would I receive from you if I don't buy anything else, if I only buy brand RX from you? Most pharmacy owners will be shocked to hear, but that response will be somewhere probably around a cost minus 275, cost minus 3. That's about where that break-even point is with all that going on. Anytime the pharmacy gets a cost of goods below that, there's going to be some cost shifting going on, meaning profitability will be borrowed from other items they're buying from the wholesaler, such as, well, the primary one is generics. And they'll take the dollars that they make on generics, better pricing that they could give the pharmacy on generics, and move those dollars over to the brand. Today, pharmacy owners commonly are demanding cost minus 5, cost minus 6 from their supplier. And why? Why? It just seems ridiculous. I mean, the pharmacies don't want to sell below their cost, but they ask their supplier to sell to them below their cost. And the reason is the reimbursements they receive from the pharmacy benefit managers. These reimbursement rates from the insurance companies have been driven lower and lower and lower all the time. And the only way the pharmacy feels they can be profitable is to demand lower cost of goods from their wholesale supplier. And some of that's real and some of it's not.
Can you talk a bit about net landed or effective cost of goods as well? How do you calculate these two terms and their value?
Sure, the terms are somewhat interchangeable. It's very important to listen to how they're stated and how they're used. When it's said to net land the cost of goods, it means to combine the off-invoice discount that the pharmacy receives with all the any monthly rebates or credits they might receive from the wholesaler and divide that by the total brand dollars purchase. It's often stated, as I said, an effective cost of goods. The invoice cost, where we get this whole thing started from, the invoice cost is going to be closer to that true cost. Again, when we're talking cost minus 3, cost minus 4, that is going to be that true cost. And then the rebates are, again, dollars earned from primary generic sales. That's how you get to this cost minus 6, cost minus 7. It's not real. I call that fool's gold. Any pharmacy that believes they're buying at cost minus 5, cost minus 6, cost minus 7, they're not. Their invoice cost, again, is where they're closer at. All that is just moving dollars from the generics, and they could have a better generic pricing, but they demand that. So when they fill the prescription, it looks like on the screen that they're being profitable. We've also recently heard these effective terms being used on the generic side, which is kind of something new. You'll hear your effective generic rebate is some percent, and if the pharmacy owner is not listening to that effective part, they believe that is the true invoice rebate percent. Sometimes it's not. It gets complicated. Sometimes there's mistakes made. We've even recently heard where a pharmacy thought they were getting a rebate in the 40% range when the reality was they were told, well, the invoice price is actually 5% less than what we normally charge on invoice price. We get a 35% rebate. So you're effectively getting a 40% discount. I think that's a little kind of some funny math, but it's really important that whatever you're presented in these proposals, that you receive a hard copy of what's being presented, and the pharmacy does their own math. If it doesn't add up, you know, they need to ask for some help or maybe just walk away.
It's important for pharmacies to understand the rebate structure for generic purchases in their wholesaler agreement as well. Can you give a little bit of an overview of how the generic rebate program works?
Yeah, there's many factors to consider in the generic purchasing side. What too often people don't understand is when you're negotiating with a wholesaler on the generic rebate, that's all you're negotiating is a generic rebate percent. You have no say on what that invoice pricing is. So you need to have to make sure you do a comparison on whatever pricing you're getting today with what the pricing that you're expected to be getting to see what the true bottom line of that is. The trouble with any comparative analysis is that invoice comparison is only good the day it's actually done. Invoice pricing changes on a constant basis. That changes daily. So there's a lot of fluctuation there. You need to be able to monitor what's going on with market pricing on any contract that you you sign, and to be able to have some influence in that market pricing. If you sign an agreement and you're getting a 40% rebate and the prices went up on everything 5% in the first couple of weeks, that whole 40% doesn't exist anymore. It's now really a 35% rebate. When you're negotiating or discussing these rebates, questions that the pharmacies also need to ask is, which items does this rebate apply to? Not every generic item they purchase from a supplier will get a rebate. The wholesalers have source contracts or primary contracts, and every one of them will have one or multiple. And your pharmacy may be tied to one, two, three, or four of those contracts. Typically, the best pricing will be in that source or primary contract, and the best rebates are tied to those. So what happens when you purchase items that aren't in those contracts? What happens? Where is the price at? Is there a rebate attached to that? Is there no rebate attached to that? And then how many items are in each one of those contracts? They're not all equal. Not all suppliers are equal. So one supplier may have 10,000 items in their source contract. Another one may have 7,000 items in it. So you got to be careful on that and comparing apples to apples. So very important to know how many items are in that source contract, what items do I buy in source contract, and what those rebates are that apply to that. They're not all applied equally. Some wholesalers too will use a rebate progressive model. And that progressive model means that you don't get the full rebate on every item. As you purchase more from them, the rebate percentage goes up. So for example, the first $20,000 or $10,000 you buy from the wholesaler, you may get a 15% rebate. The next $5,000, you may get a 20% rebate, and so on and so on. So whatever you're being quoted in that rebate progressive model, is that an average rebate or is that the highest tier rebate? Something to really watch out for. Not a lot of those are existing today, but there are some that are still out there. I guess really in the case of generic contracting, you want to just be careful what you ask for because you might get it. If you're pressuring the wholesaler for a higher rebate percentage, it will probably also mean higher invoice pricing. Those dollars have to come from somewhere. And so if that's where you end up with, too often what happens then is the pharmacy owner has a good generic rebate, but high prices, they fill a prescription, they're losing money. They become frustrated with that invoice price. Then they go looking for products somewhere else. Now their whole compliance requirements within their agreement become out of line. And then we're not happy. They're not happy. The owner's not happy.
So what do pharmacy owners need to know about generic compliance rates and how they affect the pharmacy's brand cost of goods?
Yeah. Compliance is a word owners do not like to hear. Compliance is in some cases a bad word. And there's several types of compliance, and almost every wholesale agreement will have some kind of compliance in there. If a pharmacy owner tells me they do not, that means they have not read their agreement. Because if you're getting anything in a cost of goods, again, better than a cost, say, -3, you're definitely going to have some kind of compliance there. So compliance terms you'll hear is GCR, GBR, GPR, BPR. And again, these exist in pretty much every contract. But what are they? And why are they there? Well, these terms are used by the wholesaler to monitor and assure a pharmacy is purchasing the required dollar amount of generic RX from them. So if they're giving this deep brand cost of goods, we have to have a way to make sure we're getting that profitability to give that extra percentages. They're shifting those dollars to fund that effective brand cost of goods. It's very important to know which one, two, or even three of these purchase requirements you're under in your agreement, how to attain them, and how they're calculated. The most common compliance is called GCR, generic compliance ratio. And it's calculated by dividing generics, typically source generics, by total RX. But again, you're going to want to know how that calculation is done. Again, I said typically it's source generics. Do other generics, are they included in that numerator side on the generics? Or are they only included on denominator as the total RX? It will have an effect on that calculation. And if you don't know that in the front side, you make that assumption that they're all equal, and they're not. Also, are there any items that are excluded on the denominator, on the total RX, like specialty items, dropship items, are they included or are they not included? Will have a big impact on that percentage, especially when we're looking at generic compliance ratios of 10, 11, 9, 15%. One percentage move either way can really affect where you believe you're going to get for cost of goods and where you believe you're going to get for these rebates. often too, pharmacy owners will get confused in that what the calculation is. They will do a GBR calculation, which is a generic to brand ratio calculation. And they simply take their generics and divide it by the amount of brands they're buying, which is not correct. That gives you a higher percentage number that is inaccurate, and it gives them a sense of security when they're negotiating a deal, saying, hey, you know, the requirement on this deal is a 18%, you know, generic compliance requirement. Well, I do my own math and no problem, I can hit that. In a GBR model, in a GCR model, that's quite a bit lower. So make sure you understand those numbers, make sure you understand how they use them, and again, how they're calculated. The other one I mentioned was the GPR and BPR. And these are purchase ratios, generic purchase ratio and brand purchase ratio. And they're usually defined in the contract by how much total purchases you need to buy from your wholesale supplier. So GPR or BPR will be stated as a 90% or 95%, meaning you need to buy 90% or 95% of all your products from your supplier. And unfortunately, fortunately, well, for the wholesaler, these are tracked. There are different mechanisms they use through switching data that they can track to see how much you're buying from them and how much you're dispensing, so they know if you're following within the lines of these contracts.
And what other components of a wholesaler purchase agreement should pharmacy owners be aware of?
Yeah, you know, one of the big things that I talk to all pharmacies about is the supply agreement. I'm not a believer in them. Most wholesalers will require a 2 or 3 year supply agreement, meaning you sign this agreement, these are the terms of the agreement that you will have for the next 2 or 3 years. Again, I've been in this business for over 28 years, and I've never seen the industry shift in 2 and 3 year increments. It shifts about every 6 months at the most. So the pharmacy needs that flexibility to adjust. You negotiate something today, 6-8 months down the line, it may not work because of the way your business has changed. I'll give you a really good example. We're in a national pandemic. A year ago to, you know, this month, the country basically shut down. There was a lot of panic buying. Everybody went and got their prescriptions filled. We saw huge purchase increases across all pharmacies in April of last year because everybody was getting their 90-day supply fills and the prescriptions. Well, that followed by huge declines in May, June, and July. A lot of doctor offices shut down. Farm people were not going to the doctors. It really changed the pharmacy's purchasing mix. A lot of people, of course, not going outside, not getting any infections and the flu. There was no flu season. So that really changed the pharmacy's branded generic ratio. So if you're looking at doing, well, again, during that whole time, as your business changed, could you adjust with it? And if you're looking to make a change now going forward, can you make those adjustments? And what are you going to make those adjustments based upon, the last year or what's going to be in the future? I don't know. I'm not very good at predicting what the future's at. So those purchase agreements that lock somebody down to a 2 and 3 year agreement really are tough. So I really encourage pharmacy owners, you know, find a group, find a wholesaler that will allow you to have that flexibility and not tie you down for that kind of thing. A couple other things that really need to be considered is wholesaler program fees. Too often we also see that you know, they're very profitable for a wholesaler, these programs that they have. And typically you'll see fees anywhere between $100 and $300 a month to belong to a program or use a program. Encourage pharmacy owners, look at your statements, look at your invoices. Are you using the program? If not, maybe you need to use the program because obviously you were sold on it at one point, or get off of it and stop paying those extra fees. Highly profitable again for the wholesaler. And if you're not getting any benefit out of it, you don't want to do that. Pay terms are also very important. Again, some people think it's very chic to have 30-day pay terms. I only have to pay every 30 days. My reimbursement's coming back from my PBMs. But there's a cost to that. And if you can figure out a way to pay your wholesaler faster, you will improve your purchasing. You will improve your cost of goods. Another thing that's been really popular the last few years is these non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, where a group or a wholesaler will ask a pharmacy owner to sign a non-disclosure agreement before I'll show you what the terms of the deal will be. And many pharmacy owners think, well, they're asking me to do this because it's a really, really good deal and I can't tell anybody else about it. It may be, it may not be. The thing is you won't be able to tell because you don't have the ability to compare it with anything else because the agreement says you can't disclose the terms of it. So you can't disclose, you can't do the comparison now, and it'll be really hard to do the comparison again in the future. So not a big fan of non-disclosure agreements. We can talk for hours about the intricacies of these supplier agreements, but you know, I want to stress that it's really, really important that pharmacies need to understand about purchasing inventory. It's ever changing. It's really a huge math problem. It's not just get a good brand cost of goods a good generic rebate percentage and not think about it for 2 to 3 years. The industry shifts, the industry is changing. They need to be able to move with that. And these percentages are not indicators of profitability. A low brand cost of goods percentage, a high generic rebate percentage does not mean you're going to be profitable. You need to understand all of these factors that we just talked about today, all these factors come together and how they affect the total cost of inventory, what that bottom line cost of inventory is, not how you're buying each individual drug. All these factors, they add up, the rebates, the credits, et cetera. Pharmacy owners need to understand, will I be paying less? Is my cost of inventory lower for my total bottom line for all items purchased on any agreement they're looking at with my current supplier, on a proposed supplier? That's really where they need to be at.
Wayne, it's been a pleasure, and thank you for taking the time to walk us through this important topic today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Over the Counter. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. For more episodes, check out drugtopics.com. Under our media tab, click podcasts.